consideration. Sorry, the implications of Hecker, do we need Hecker or not, which seems to be a machlokas, Tosfos and the Rambam. Is that a big deal? And then the second issue is the question of whether Hiddur of Chanukah is tied into the mitzvah in a fundamental way. So do we treat the mitzvah as guided by its Hiddur principles? That has many practical implications. So there are many subtopics that will be included in this. But those are the two basic headings that we want to address within the sugya now. What exactly are the practical implications of focusing on Hecker or not? And what are the practical implications of saying that Mahadran in Chanukah will take on a more fundamental role than Hiddur mitzvah in the rest of the Torah? And what I imagine will happen is that today will be mostly the first question about the importance of Hecker. And the other issue, which is a shorter topic, will maybe spill over a little bit into next week. Okay? So far, so good? All right, so let's talk a little bit about that first subject. So we saw that what seems to emerge from Tosfos and the Rambam, separate from all the lumdus, is just the details that Tosfos says, do not do level 3 on top of level 2. Don't combine the systems. Because if you light 12 candles, or you light, does the Rambam have 80 candles, on the 8th night of Hanukkah with your 10-person household, that number will be meaningless to people. So Tosfos says, we need Hecker, we need it to be recognized, so only do per day, do not do per night, per person, only do per day, do not do per person. But the Rambam seems to not worry about that because he allows you and encourages you to combine the two. And therefore apparently is less worried about this visibility. And yesterday we talked a little bit about what the logic is behind the two opinions, why you might say one or might say the other. So what difference would it make, practically speaking, separate from the direct question that the Rambam and Tosfos argue about how do we set up the system? Let's focus now on our current practice. Again, let's say, with all due respect to the Sephardim present, but the Ashkenazim, let's say we follow Biad Ramah, the Ramah seems to say that we should light per night and per person, but everybody lights their own candles as the per person fulfillment. So what kind of shilohs can you think of that may possibly draw on this question? Are we focused on Hecker specifically? Or is it less about the exact number, it's more about directions, go up, go down, whatever it is, but not so much about specific numbers? Any shilohs come to mind? There are quite a few. So just to, yes, Frank?
Two people light up either end of the same number.
That's an interesting question, actually, also. I wasn't even thinking of that one. That presumably does create some type of Hecker, and that's actually, it draws another issue that's a good one. It brings up also the question the Avnei Nezer had brought about, does the menorah have a status? Right? If the menorah doesn't have any specific halachic status, so then who cares if it happens to be the same menorah? I have two single candles that are separated by a few inches. Presumably those are two people light. But if you want to say the menorah has a chalos, you know, the menorah has some type of halachic significance, so maybe the fact of two people being on the menorah, the same menorah, and trying to do two on one, that's an interesting question. Maybe it's more about that issue than it is about this issue. It's more about the question the Avnezer introduced, that the menorah has a halachic significance. What else? Another one?
Two wicks splitting in the same thing of oil.
Oh, so that's the Gemara talks about. That's a whole sugya which we'll get to, comes up for other reasons.
So again, those are both. There's not even a discussion.
Right. I know. Those are good halachic questions, probably draw on other issues. How about the following? Shlomo Kluger has a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. It's called Chacham Shlomo. He was a tremendous guy. But he has a lot of very interesting conclusions for halacha, which sometimes are minority views. So he says the following. What if you decide, okay, the second night of Hanukkah, should light two candles, right? Let's say you decide, I'm going to light two candles. I'll light 200 candles. I'll light 20 candles. You want to add on to the number. So he assumes that you're allowed to do that. And he brings a proof from Neir Shabbos. Because we find in the context of Neir Shabbos that we know many people have a practice to light more than two candles Friday night. Maybe they do so based on how many children they have. That's a common version of that practice. Different reasons why people do it, but many light more than two candles. Even though the two is not a random number, he points out. You might think that's the difference. Right? Who cares? Okay, you have to have neiros, maybe, so it should be at least two, but there's no difference between 2 and 10. It's all multiple. So it's not totally true, because as he points out, right, it does, there is a symbolism behind two candles of Zohar and Shomron. So even though the number has a symbolism, we still let you do more and nobody complains. So maybe we should say the same is true by Hanukkah candles also. That even if tonight is night number 2 and you should light 2 candles, if you want to do 22, so then that should be okay. So how does that sound to you? Does that sound like an unobjectionable psak, or is that perhaps questionable? So the comparison does seem a little bit tricky, right? To say that just because Shnei Rosh Shabbos we allow you to have more, and Zohar and Shomer is a theme, it doesn't seem like that's exactly the same thing here. It seems that we're counting a story, we have a progression, and to play with the numbers, even if you have the number included, that does seem to be a little bit of a question. There's an objection that's noted in Chuvah's Mishnah Sakhir. Mishnah Sakhir is a Chuvah's you may not have heard of, but you may have heard of the author, and if the author's name doesn't ring a bell, his other sefer may ring a bell. His name was Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal. Is that a familiar name?
Yisachar.
Sorry?
Nei
Yisachar? No. A very different sefer. He also, some of you will be disappointed in yourselves not recognizing his name, he also authored the sefer Eim HaBonim Smecha. Right, so the author of Eim HaBonim Smecha is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Rosh Hashanah Tshuvos LaHalacha, called the Shuvah Shmishna Sakhir. So he notes that this is not so necessarily compelling that this should be the case, that when you're supposed to light 2 candles, to light more is necessarily okay. You could hear an argument why it isn't. Some other svarim they discuss, I think maybe Rav Asher Weiss has a little bit of discussion about this, and with this svarim, that it's interesting. So let's say you say it's a problem. Let's say you say third night, you're supposed to light 3 candles, and lighting 6 candles is bad. So what does that mean? It means I light my 3 candles, I'm okay. Now when I light the 4th candle, I have undone my mahadra, I'm no longer okay, especially in the context where we see kafsa lozakukla, that once you light, you don't really pay attention to what happens afterwards. So just technically speaking, is that an objection? Technically speaking, can you say that if you're lighting enough candles, once you go past it, you can't undo what you've done right to begin with?
Yeah,
sir?
Yeah, wouldn't you say that it would kind of, it's different from Kassel's Zohar, but because in this case, since the whole point is that you're trying to send a message, as soon as you begin to distort that message, then you haven't accomplished even what you set out to do, versus with Kassel's Zohar, but you started and the message was there, but then it was gone. But it wasn't part of the same motion or action, something happened that became extinguished. Here, I feel like maybe if something makes it different, you like kind of overdone the whole term.
So being there for a split second is not enough. I mean, if you've never expressed the message that because you keep going past 3, you've never let the message of 3 ever been conveyed. That could be. It's interesting. He evokes in that context that we talked about from the development that maybe if you intend on undoing your light, that's a problem. And we said that if you hold, you have to have enough oil. We spoke about this a few weeks ago. That if you have to have enough oil in your menorah to last, so then maybe if you know you plan on extinguishing it yourself, a minute in, that's like not having enough oil. So maybe if you're in a process of undoing what you've done, maybe there's what to wonder about that. That's an interesting question in general. Another issue, which I'll just throw out there because I want to focus on the point after it, but we mentioned already, and maybe we'll come back to fill in a little bit more about this, but just to be aware of it. If you recall, we talked about the sugya of the proper zman for Neris Hanukkah. So we discussed that it's brought in the Torah, and then we've shown him that once the night is over, you can't light, and the next night, you can't make it up. So the Svarim explained that by saying the next night you can't make it up, we just mean that if you miss night number 3, you can't do some kind of tashlumin on night number 4. But we're not suggesting that if you miss a night of Hanukkah, you can't pick up from the next night. But that is an interesting question. Is there such a thing? Now, if there was a discussion, should we on some level compare Hanukkah to Sfiras HaOmer? And say that just like we have by Sfiras HaOmer an idea that if a day is missing, it impacts on the integrity of the whole thing. Is there a notion like that by the Mahajan of Hanukkah as well? That if you're missing a step in the middle, maybe that's a problem. Which lahalacha, it doesn't seem to be a very common perspective, but maybe there is such an idea. Rabbi Josh Hoffman told me that he heard from the Rav that he thought there was such an issue. That there is some type of a comparison to Sfiras Omer. There's also a tshuva about this for Ephraim Greenblatt, formerly of Memphis, and his tshuva is Rivdus Ephraim, has a tshuva along those lines, based on the tshuva Kiborim. That maybe there is such a notion that the Mahajan is similar to Sfiras Omer, and if you're missing a part, then the whole message is flawed, and the Mahajan has a missing component that casts a problem on the whole thing. Yosef, you had a question?
I was thinking that it's hard to, you would have other complications to start to compare it here somewhere, because like talking about counting up versus counting down versus the main thing. There's also the Heder Mitzvah, if you look at the Hanukkah as a mitzvah of a growing 8 days, like as opposed to each day its own merit, it clearly seems like it's not something you look on reflectively as it's all one massive mitzvah.
Although we have the same kinds of questions when it gets to Sfiras Omer, if we were to go into detail on that Sugya, you'd find that it's possible that you have the same type of issues there. Maybe there is
ask. But we see the halakha, though, that you're not making it, you miss one that Hanukkah, you don't have an issue making a bracha the following night.
But that's the question. The bracha, you wouldn't have an issue because you would at least have an ikar mitzvah. So you have the right to make a bracha on one candle. But maybe the mahajan, maybe that kind of separates it out. But maybe the mahajan component, maybe there is. Again, I don't think in practice anyone's really knowing like this, but theoretically it's an interesting question to raise. Is there some type of comparison? I'll mention another issue along those lines. Nassim Gishtetner, the Shuvas Lahoris Nassim, has a discussion which the question may not bother you so much for a certain very immediately apparent reason, but he discusses why is it that we never had a practice of Sveika de Yoma by Hanukkah? Why shouldn't we say we should tack on an extra day in Chutzlaritz like we do by Sukkot and Shavuos and Pesach? Now, your immediate thought might be that we don't have any Yontif Drabbanans that have Sveika D'Yoma. It's a fair approach, but let's assume for a second it's not limited to Daraisas. So would you have thought that there should be a Sveika D'Yoma Chutzlaritz practice by Hanukkah? So in discussing that, he makes reference to a well-known shuvah, the Dvar Avram. Dvar Avram is a great rabbi from Tavno, and we have special appreciation for him in this yeshiva because he gave a salvation smicha. That when the Rav wanted to come to America, he needed some type of official ordination so that he could travel. And, so he didn't have any such letter, so the Dvar Avram was a very prominent Talmud Chacham, wrote a letter for him, and you can read it, it was reprinted. Came out a few years ago after the Rav passed away. It came out, the Yeshiva came out with a sefer called Zichron HaRav, a memorial volume for the Rav. So in the beginning they republished this letter from the Dvar Avram, where he writes, Halacha kamoso b'chol makom. Halacha is like him in whatever he says. It's like Svi Harari put it, it's like a blank check in Halacha, so in any event, the Dvar Avram has a tshuva where he discusses the question of the Balamor and Psachim raises. Daf Yomi is almost finished with the Psachim. So the Balamor and Psachim raises a question that why don't we have Sfiras HaOmer and Sveika D'Yoma? Why don't we apply the rule of Sveika D'Yoma to Sfiras HaOmer? So the Balamor has one answer, but the answer that Dvar Avram has, which provoked all kinds of halachic shadows on its own, if you accept it very literally, so the Dvar Avram says you can't have a concept of counting Yusufik. It doesn't make sense. If you're counting, counting doesn't mean just saying numbers. It means that you're assigning values. So you can't say, all right, how many desks are in this room? Okay, one or two or three, whatever that is, five, seven. You have to say real numbers. So you can't count zeros over and say, okay, it's four or five-ish. Six, maybe. You have to, if you count, means you're saying a number and you know that's the number. So the Harish Nassim thought that maybe you could say a similar thing by Hanukkah, that the way we light the candles is based on a progression in the story. And you can't say, today's the third night or the fourth night or whatever it is. You have to have an absolute system, and that's going to be carried over from Sfiras HaOmer. In Sfiras HaOmer, that attitude carried a lot of implications, and it's not our topic for now, But then all kinds of questions came up. So what if I want to count the night of sphere, and I'm not sure what night it is? And so can I, if I say tonight is 5, and then I say tonight is 6, and then one of them is right, am I not Yotze because I wasn't sure? Or what if I said one of them, but I wasn't really sure, and I found out later I was right? It's more good because I didn't really know. So there's a whole discussion in literature about how far to go with such a principle. But that's the basic idea. Yosef, your question?
David, it sounds strange though, because we know we have Yom Tov where we are, we do have the Sfeika, but we still have to practice the Sfeika Yom Ha, which in theory then technically means that, yeah, on the counting of the days, we're also kind of a sub, we're also acting, practicing as if it's a sub.
But the only, it's only Sfeira where there's a mitzvah that's about counting. Other days, you don't have a mitzvah that counts. When you have a mitzvah that counts, says the Dvar Avraham, to have that mitzvah be wishy-washy, have the counting be wishy-washy, there's no such thing as counting in that sense. Other Yom Tovim, we don't have a mitzvah per se to count.
Yeah. But it's as a result of the counting, we have mitzvahs.
Right, but it's not a mitzvah per se to count. So if the commandment is we have to count, so counting means we have to know what we're doing. We can't be wishy-washy. I think Michael's up first, that's right.
By Hanukkah, would you, if you separate the night of this, would you be able to say that, according to Tosfot, who stresses Sakara, that maybe you should light only one candle in order
so,
to...
Right, so that's an interesting question. So that taka is also maybe a nafkamina, this whole story. Right, let's say you don't know what the night is. Right? So if you want to be safe, so you could say, all right, then I should just light one candle because I know that's meaningful. But I don't know how many nights are to be represented. But maybe within the Rambam's approach, maybe it doesn't matter so much that it should be so precise. Now that's actually a little bit similar to one of the major issues of today's area of focus. Major machlokas achronim, a very practical question. What would you say about the following? Let's say it's the third night of Hanukkah, and you only have 2 candles. What should you do? How many candles should you light? What would you say?
1.
Okay, so Jonathan says 1. Who agrees with him? Okay, Ephraim says 2. Who agrees with him? Okay, so you both have some pretty good company. The view that Jonathan said is Mishnah Berurah, according to the Chayyadam, and a lot of other poskim have adopted this view as well. Sav Sofer has a truth about this that we'll refer to. Sav Sofer discusses the possibility that if you have, if it's the third night of Hanukkah and you light 2 candles, maybe that's some type of Baal Tikra. In general, even though it's a Din Drabana, you're making an assumption that you can have Baal Tikra by a Din Drabana, but Baal Tikra may mean to do a mitzvah purposely in an incomplete fashion. So to light 2 candles is meaningless. But to light 1 candle is the Ikra Takana, that means something. 2 candles means you're going for the Mahadran, but you're doing it in a way that's insufficient. So the other poskim who agreed felt it was just meaningless, there's no point doing it. And the Ksav Sofer also raised the issue of Baal Tigra in this consideration. So many did take that view, like Jonathan says, that you should only light 1 candle. The Beis Halevi seems to take this view as well. There are different places in his, again, this all comes back in his Sefer and Chumash, the Beis Halevi al Torah, where he has these kind of random ha'aris and Hanukkah right there in the middle of the Sefer and Chumash. Why it evolved that way, I don't know, but that's where all the Nekudas on Hanukkah are quoted from. So at this point, he discusses in 2 places. So in one place, he basically says this is an open question, that he thinks that it's poly. That if one takes the view like Tosis, that Hecker is a very big deal. So then there's no point in doing an incomplete number. You shouldn't do too much, like Lipshon Kodrit, and you shouldn't do too little. But if it's the Rambam's view, that Hecker is less important, so then you might as well do as much as you can. So the Beis Halevi writes, at least initially, that this question is an open question, which should be dependent on these 2 possibilities. Later on, elsewhere in those comments, he seems to say you should only do 1, but when he's considering the question initially, he raises that it should be dependent on this issue, which again, we've devoted today to. Yeah?
This is assuming that you have enough candles for the rest of Hanukkah.
Ah, so that the Chayyim talks about also, and that's another interesting question. Let's come back to that. So there's a lot of outgrowths of this question. Let's start this issue per se. So we said Jonathan has a lot of good company. Ephraim has a lot of good company too. In fact, one of the great Gedolei Rosh Yeshivas of the past century, the late past century, took his view, and that's Rav Shach. Rav Shach, the author of the Abi Ezri, has also quoted in a sefer called Mibei Midrasha, and talks about this in his letters, quoted from a number of places. Rav Shach agreed with Ephraim. And not only did he agree, but he emphasizes a couple times that he thinks it's pashut. He says he doesn't understand why the Beis Halevi says differently. He says to him, it seems obvious that you should do whatever you have. So if you only had to, put up two candles. So he doesn't see really any spur in his mind to take a different approach. And he may have also some good company, because Bavel Chaim Chaim Kanievsky, in the Sefer Shona Halachos, so he quotes the views of the Mishnah Berurah, and he normally mentions if the Chazon Ish disagrees. So on this point, he quotes the Mishnah Berurah's invoking of a Chayei Adam that you should only do one. But then he notes that Rav Shach disagrees. So there's a Sefer called Mishmar HaLevi. Mishmar HaLevi, you can find it on HebrewBooks.org. It was written by a Talmud Chacham named Moshe Mordechai Schulzinger, who had strong relationships with a lot of the famous Talmudei Chacham of the past century. So he wrote some Svarim, he wrote a Sefer about the Ruska Rav, I think he wrote a Sefer about Rav Shach also. There's a couple of Svarim, Yipine, this and Yipine, that talks about his relationships with these Gedolim. So he has also Svarim on Masech, it's called Mishmar HaLevi, and for some reason in the Sefer on Chagiga, he has some pieces on Hanukkah in the back. You can read it, it's on HebrewBooks.org if you want to download it for free. So in the Mishmar HaLevi in Chagiga, he says that he asked Uchan Kanyevsky. He said that your normal approach in the Sefer Shona Halachos is that you only modify the Mishnah Berurah based on the Chazon Ish. And here you're invoking Rav Shach. Why? So he responded, apparently, that he has two rayas that Rav Shach might be right about. So what are his two rayas? One raya is that we discussed yesterday that the Vilna Gaon seems to believe that the significance of the last line in this sugya about the Zakenim who one did like Beis Hillel and one did like Beis Shammai, and we mentioned the halachic implications of that story might be to show you could follow Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai, but the Gra also pointed out that the fact that they emphasize the reason of Pari HaChag, Malin Mekodesh Reimaridin, is to show that that's the answer we accept. So who cares if that's the answer we accept? It's just a different explanation. So the Gra had said, as we mentioned yesterday, that that answer supports the Rambam, that we don't care so much about Hekel. It's only about the direction. And the other answer about counting days, days that have yet to come, the days that have been, that's more like Tosus's concern. So one of his supports for Rav Shach is that the Gra's point that it seems to be that he feels the Paskin like the Rambam in that sense. His other point is another Rambam. That the Rambam, which maybe is the Shitaso, that, Fran, have a question about that?
Yeah.
This is all your point of view.
No, it's not so true. If we Paskin like that, takes again the whole of that side of the Mahalos, and
it's not going to correspond to the Bishon, because it's not going to be Mahalos Bishon, because it was too last night.
And then it's not corresponding to the
Parashah. Right, so that's an interesting question. Are we worried about last night, or are we worried about tonight? So should you at least keep going, light two candles tonight, or third night, because at least you're keeping up from the previous night as opposed to going down? Or should you say, no, just light one candle, even though it means going down? You're right, that we will get into some kind of complicated math sometimes, depending on how much you worry about looking at the overall pattern.
Sure.
So the other Rambam that he's invoking, the Abba Grom, quotes a Rambam. And the Abba Grom is quoted in Hilchos Lulav, Magen Avram, and Hilchos Lulav, which I would have given you to realize people finish on Ramakomos, the Magen Avram and Hilchos Lulav, can you send it around for tomorrow, quotes the Abed Rabba, quotes the Rambam, that the Rambam has a tshuva that seems to say that if somebody lights Hanukkah candles, and he first lights one candle, and then he gets more candles later, so then he makes another bracha later, which is a discussion we have to talk about separately, the question of the bracha on the additional candles, the big machlokas we find elsewhere. But the Rambam's language is, yeah, you'll make a bracha b'chol pam v'pam, every time, which somehow gives you the sense that it's, you'll have a couple of opportunities. Maybe you'll be the fifth night of Hanukkah and you want five candles, so you'll make a bracha on the first one. And then you'll get two more candles and make a bracha on that too. And then maybe you'll be lucky, you'll get another two candles and make another bracha on that. So this Rambam is invoked in some of these Svarim as possibly a raya for this. And the Ksav Sofer discusses this in his Chukas earlier Svarim, had quoted this Rambam as being relevant to this discussion. So there's a couple of possibilities of reading the Rambam differently. Some suggest that, I think this is the way Mishnah Levi has it, that maybe what the Rambam is saying is that maybe the issue is like this. Maybe it's, let's say, the third night of Hanukkah, and you have two people in the household. So at first you have one candle, so you'll make a bracha for the candle. Then you get a hold of the second candle. So you'll say, you know what, I'll at least do the mahadri. So per person. So then I'll have a bracha for that. And then you get the third candle, and you say, okay, now I can do the mahadri and a mahadri, so make a bracha on that. But maybe he doesn't necessarily mean that any stage in the middle of the mahadrin and the mahadrin is significant to make a bracha. Another interpretation, which is actually supported if you look in the original text of the Rambam and the Chuvis and the Pe'er Hador, that maybe he's talking about somebody who's a shliach for other people. So he's told to light candles on behalf of others a few times in a night, so you should make a bracha each time. Maybe that's all he means. He doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have this incremental increase within one night. So this is a major debate, major machlokas among contemporary poskim. If you only have less than the required candles for that night, how exactly should you go about it? And it's a discussion. One contemporary sefer says, so Lamaisa, so what do we hold? So it should really depend if the assumption is, as we've been maintaining the whole time, that this is really dependent on the Rambam and Tosfos. So then it should depend. How do we paskin? Right, so how do we paskin on that question, the Rambam and Tosfos? So we saw that's not such a simple question. Right? First of all, it depends whether you're Ashkenazi or Sfaradi. But again, the Mechilas HaSfaradim, if you focus on the Ashkenazim for a moment, so it's still not so clear. Right? Because we started off with the assumption that the Ashkenazim paskin like the Rambam, that the Rambam paskins like the Rambam. But then we spent some time discussing that it's not exactly the same. Right? That the Rambam says the Baal Bayis lights all the candles, and the Rambam says everyone lights their own candles. So it's now significant. How do you explain that Rambam discrepancy? So a few days ago, we discussed that it may all be a machlokas about Hiddur Mitzvah in general and a Maisa Mitzvah and the question by Bris Mila and the like. So then that's one kind of approach to the Ramah. But we mentioned also there's another approach to the Ramah which might be a little more straightforward, that the Ramah is actually worried about Tosfos. Right? That the Ramah says we should do the Rambam plus Hecker, plus Tosfos's visibility. So then it becomes an important question. If other issues are dependent on whether we care about Hecker or not, so what does the Rambam conclude? Do we care about Hecker? Either he passes like the Rambam who doesn't, or he modifies the Rambam's view for Tosfos who does. So it becomes relevant what exactly is the Rambam's final line if we want to know how to interpret other issues. So it sounds like, as some Svarim maintain, that ultimately he is worried about Hecker. And that's probably why most of the major poskim have adopted this view that we do worry about Hecker, and we do want a precise number, And that's why the Mishnah Berurah and the Ksav Sofer and others, like Jonathan said, took the view that it should be the exact number, no more, no less. And if you don't have enough, then it should only be one candle for the Ikar Mitzvah, because maybe Tosfos' consideration of Heker wins out. So according to the Sfaradim, for sure it wins out, because the Shulchan Aruch adopts it, and maybe even the Ashkenazim also have taken that into final consideration as well. Rav Menashe Klein, also the Tshuva's Mishnah Halachas, has a tshuva about this, where he also takes the one candle view, but he quotes Rav Shach also, and he tries to explain, so why would Rav Shach say differently? So he says, he assumes that it's like every other area of life, that if you have an esrog, which is not perfectly mehudr, but has some hidurim to it, so you'll try to get as much hidurim as you can. You won't only get a mehudr esrog if it's perfectly mehudr, you'll try to go as far as you can. That's probably Rav Shach's thinking. But that's only true, again, maybe if we assume that the Hidr of Chanukah, the Mahadrim of Chanukah, is comparable to Hidr Mitzvah in other areas, which again goes to the central question that we started with, is this really the case? Is this comparable to other Hidr? So that's the major machlokas about that question. And again, it does seem to be that the majority of authoritative poskim and the majority of Svara points do seem to weigh in favor of only doing the Ikar Mitzvah on that night. There's an interesting question that was raised by Rav Nevinson. It was published in a journal, actually have it here. Look at this journal, Mavakshe Torah, it's a journal that exists. There you go. And sometimes it has topics, so this edition is on Chanukah. So there's many fascinating things about Chanukah in here. I've referred to it in the past, I should have to have it with me now. So there's an essay by Rav Nevin Solomon here. So he raises the following question. He says, what would you do? We kind of alluded to this a minute ago in one of the possible explanations of the Rambam. So what would you do? Since he thinks it's interesting, Bechlau, that the poskim would say light one candle, they don't at least acknowledge that there might be a different issue with him. That what if, like we mentioned before, let's say it's the third night of Hanukkah, and you have two candles. So what if you happen to have two people in the house? So maybe then, even though you would normally go for the Mahadrim and a Mahadrim, maybe you should at least go for the Mahadrim and light two candles, one per person. So he notes that it's interesting that you don't find that raised as an issue, because it might be possibly relevant that one should at least try to cover that if it's possible. And in the context of that, he asks the following question. Says, can we transfer this machlokas over to the question of mahadrim? Not just mahadrim and a mahadrim, but mahadrim. Let's say you want to do mahadrim, and you have five people in the household. You only have three candles. Is mahadrim all or nothing? Or is it comparable to whatever attitude we'll bring to mahadrim and a mahadrim? That it may be all or nothing. What about mahadrim? It's an interesting question. Right, if we say that counting days maybe has to be precise because it has a specific message. So how do we view the Mahadran of per person? What is the point of per person? We haven't really explored that so much. I mean, that if we assume that the point of Mahadran and a Mahadran per night is either a general increase or conveying a message, what's the nature of the Heder of just the Mahadran of per person? Is that all or nothing? So the truth is, that may also be a little bit of a Rambam-Rambam difference. Because we have to figure out what the person idea is, and if we'll come back to this. But the Rambam, who says the Balabayas is lighting it, now that becomes kind of a precise message. If the Balabayas is going to light four candles because of the per-person consideration, it seems to mean that there are four people. It seems to mean that it should be a precise number. But the way the Rambam has it, that everyone lights their own, it kind of changes the whole structure of what's going on, which is why a lot of attention has been paid on that discrepancy. That the Ramah's version of the Mahadrim, the per-person Hiddur, is that not so much the Balabayas does something differently, but that every household member decides, listen, I could have been Yotze with the head of the household, Neri Shabesa, but as a Hiddur, I decide to do this myself. That's the nature of the Hiddur, to decide to do it on your own. So that's a whole different concept than what the Rambam has, which is worth thinking about. But if that's the case, it seems to also make sense that that's a decision for every individual household member. So if half the household members decide they want to do it on their own, and the other half doesn't, presumably that should be fine. Presumably whichever family member wants to be mahadir to do it on their own and not to rely on the household, if half of them do and half of them don't, fine. While if the idea is the Baal HaBayis likes her household members, then maybe it's more likely it should be a precise number. So that's taka, it's an interesting question which you don't find as much attention paid to. So that's a whole other question to explore. It also maybe highlights the possible relationship between the different hidurim here, and that's a point that Rav Nevenzahl raises. Are there any other questions you can think of that may emerge from this type of issue? The Chayyadim also discusses in his same statement, he says, so let's say you have 9 candles. So the question is, if you're going to light 2 for the second night, the question is then the third night, if you have 10 candles, so you'll have this issue, should you do 2 that night or should you do 1 that night? But why don't you say, let's do 3 that night and not worry about what comes afterwards? So that was also a question that some of the Sfarim raised, that should we say that we'll look at hiddur on a nightly basis, and right now you have enough candles to light for tonight, and therefore let that suffice, and don't worry about what happens tomorrow night. Tomorrow night you'll be anonymous. So that's an interesting question to consider in general, because you're basically evaluating the hiddur mitzvah of tonight against the ikkar mitzvah of future nights. So that raises 2 issues. One issue is that, strictly speaking, you'll say, well, what kind of a contest is that? The ikkar mitzvah is always more important than a hiddur mitzvah. So it may be true, but maybe you'll say that Hanukkah is so fundamentally different that the hiddur becomes a part of the mitzvah itself. No, maybe in this case I should pay more attention to the hiddur mitzvah than I would otherwise. So maybe any other area I would say that I should worry about the ikkar mitzvah overall more than being able to do a hiddur today. But maybe Hanukkah is different. It's a possibility. Was Yosef up first in the fight?
Yeah, but it seems so stretched to say something like that, because hiddur has always been consistent in how you do the mitzvah, the ikkar mitzvah. And here, even though you want to say that Hanukkah is different, again, it's different in the how, but it certainly doesn't seem to trump the ikkar.
But maybe that's also part of the how, that maybe the same way that right now we'd say that this mitzvah that's in front of you is the whole responsibility, so then maybe the whole mitzvah includes the hiddur in a way that other mitzvahs don't. And we'll see, we'll probably get to it more on Monday, other examples of how that plays out, that there seems to be an unusual focus on the hiddur, which doesn't necessarily match what we find by other mitzvahs. So this might be an example of that, theoretically. There's another question also to consider here, which we'll mention in a second, I think it was Ephraim and then Michael.
So are we saying that if you can't do hiddur on the first night, then there's no point in doing it the second
night? No, we're saying that if you have to choose between doing hiddur tonight and possibly not having enough light at all in future nights, what should you do? Because if you have, let's say, the kshayla is, you have 9 candles for all of Hanukkah, it's one of the scenarios the Chayyad mentions, and it's the second night. So, okay, so I'm going to do 2 candles tonight, and I'll do 3 tomorrow night, and then I won't have enough for the last 2 days. But there's all kinds of nuances in this. One safer discuss is, let's say you have 14 candles total. So what should you do? Should you do 1, 2, 3, 4, and then drop back to 1? Or should you do 1 until the 7th night, and do 7 that night? And there's all kinds of nuances which are all going to depend on how you understand the various mathematical components and the various logical components that underscore what's going on. So that's one issue. There's another issue, I think. Michael, I'll take a question here. Okay, Fran, you have a question?
No, that was it.
Okay, so also there's a question in general about how much you weigh now versus the future. For example, I'm posting a talk about it, that in general is a whole truth from the Rabbaz and the Chacham Tzvi, and the Shemelech talks about, you know, if somebody is in jail or in the army and he's not able to fulfill mitzvahs in an optimal fashion, and they tell him he can have a furlough for a day, he can have a day off. then presumably he'll be able to fulfill mitzvos actively. So should he say, okay, I'll wait till Yom Kippur, I'll try to get the best possible mitzvah, or should he say, no, I'll take my first opportunity because my responsibility is always what's in front of me, and then whatever comes in the future, you take it day by day. So for example, I don't know if we talked about this year, I don't think we did, but the post can raise the question that let's say you go to a doctor for your checkup before Yom Kippur, happen to go before Rosh Hashanah to ask him if you're healthy enough to fast this Yom Kippur. So the doctor says to you, yeah, I think you could handle a fast. I wouldn't do it too often, I wouldn't do two in a week, but you could be okay fasting one day. So the doctor, he's heard of Yom Kippur, he's never heard of Tzom Gedalia. So he doesn't realize what he just told you is that you can't handle two fasts in a week, but you do have two fasts coming up that week. Especially this year when Tzom Gedalia is closer to Yom Kippur because of Shabbos. So what do? If the doctor tells you can only fast one day in the coming week, and you have Tzom Gedalia and Yom Kippur coming up, so after all, we debate about this. They say, on the one hand, you say, what are you going to tell me that Yom Kippur should step aside from Tzom Gedalia? Yom Kippur is clearly a much bigger deal than Tzom Gedalia, so you should put all your focus on Yom Kippur. While others say, no, that's not the way it works, that you take everything one day at a time. Right now, you have Tzom Gedalia first. Can you handle Tzom Gedalia? The doctor said yes. So even though that means that come Yom Kippur time, it's a fascinating idea to think about, come Yom Kippur time, you're not going to be able to handle it. When you put yourself in that position on purpose by fasting Tzom Gedalia, still, that's an onus. You're still, it's against your will, but you're not able to fast Yom Kippur, even though you did this because you were following Takanas Chachamim. The Gemara in the beginning of Ksubas, she was going to Ksubas next year, the Gemara in the beginning of Ksubas talks about the concept of onus when a person is unavoidably stopping during the mitzvah, let's say. And the Gemara there has the concept of onus betakanas chachamim, that if a person is unable to do something, not because he's physically unable, but because he's following the din rabbanan, because his adherence to chazal means he won't be able to fulfill a mitzvah, let's say. So that also could be called onus. So then maybe that's the case here, that you can't fast in Yom Kippur because you're an onus, because you follow the din rabbanan to fast on Tzom Gedalia. It's a hard idea to relate to, but maybe there is such a notion. So you could say here as well, you could say, listen, it's not my job to worry about what's going to happen a few nights from now. Maybe there'll be a miracle, like Hanukkah in general, right? Which is what Sefer invokes. So we maybe look to the Maccabees and see what the policy is about holding off in favor of future nights, right? That was the whole issue. So maybe we should look to them as a riot. So maybe you'll say, listen, maybe the next will happen tomorrow night. Right now, I have three candles. It's the third night of Hanukkah. So I should light the Hiddur because of a general consideration that we don't necessarily evaluate today versus the future and say, well, the Iker Mitzvah is more important than the Hiddur. Maybe that's not my job. Maybe my job is to worry about it tonight. And then especially if you say it's not just the Hiddur, but that it becomes part of the Mitzvah itself, maybe there's more room to say that. Michael?
Isn't it a pasuk?
When we die, you can have the only worry about today. Hayom ha'aseh. Okay, I can handle that. Maybe that's a valid proof. So in any event, this is a general machlokas haposkin. How much you worry about the future when you make these decisions? Basically, if you go for quality over immediacy, you say that I try to maximize my opportunities thinking about the future also, or I worry about the tonight as well. So that's a general machlokas in halacha, and maybe that has general relevance here, maybe it has specific relevance, depending on how you understand the whole Mahadran concept. So there's another issue that some posts can raise, just to connect also to that we did recently. So he said as follows, not sure why you don't take the following attitude, why you don't say the following point raised, that if we say you don't have enough oil from the Mahadran, let's say if we're dealing with, we're assuming we're dealing with oil, so why don't you just light one good candle that'll last, and then all the other candles use a minimal amount of oil. Because since we saw that it's a machlokas, whether there really is a halacha that you have to have a shear of shemen, and we assume the halacha that you do have to have a shear of shemen, but presumably we should only be machmir on that for one candle. For the ikur candle, we should assume you should put a shear. And then presumably have a little bit left, other than it's not somatsumsum. So whatever you have, why don't you light very small candles that only last a few seconds of the other candles, and that maybe you should fill Mahadran that way. Have a insignificant amount of oil, but you'll have a very small candles to be able to have other candles? So that's also an interesting question to consider, which also draws upon some other related issues. Is the idea of a mahadran that it ties into the Ikar Mitzvah, so it should be somewhat parallel to whatever it is, or is it completely on a different track? And to what extent do the chumras that apply to the first candle apply to the mahadran candles? Which is a question we touched upon a little bit. The opening shiur on Monday, when we talked about whether you should go begging for the mahadran candles. That ties into that question, and that's basically a segue into our next topic. So in a moment, I'll just quickly pause what we spoke about, but basically what's next on our agenda for when we return to Hanukkah topics on Monday is we just want to add a few points to this other issue of to what extent does the chumrah of the first candle carry over to the mahadran candles because of a perhaps unique component of the hiddur of Hanukkah that's more than hiddur by mitzvahs in general, and then we'll segue from that topic into the significance and the impact of Ner Mishubeso. What does that mean? Is that saying that Hanukkah is a Chovas HaBayis specifically, and what are the possible implications of that? Has some very significant implications. So what do we talk about now? We talked about the question of what is the impact of caring about Hector or not. We talked about the Machlokas Tachach Mishlomo and the Mishnah Sachir about can you go beyond and have more candles like you found by Neir Shabbos. We talked about is there a parallel between Neir's Chanukah and Sfiras HaOmer in the sense that you shouldn't have Sveika Deyoma like the Dvar Rav says by Sfiras HaOmer, and that maybe you shouldn't miss a day like the Rebbe Sefraim and maybe the Soloveitchik discussed in terms of Chanukah also. And then the major Machlokas HaAchronim, if you have more than one candle but not enough for the full complement of that night, should you light one or should you light as many as you have? Most poskim seem to follow Mishnah Berurah, the Chayyadim, and the Ksav Sofer, and others, that you just do one candle, but there is a strong view along with the Rishach, maybe Rukhan Kanievsky agreed with him, that you should do as many candles as you have, and we talked about how that ties into this overall question and some of the various proofs and issues that are raised in terms of understanding that. And I mentioned Rav Nevenzahl's point in terms of maybe the same question could be raised about the mahadran as well. If you don't have enough for everyone in your household, should you just do one or should you do a few people in the household? And we saw that it would be very differently considered from the Rambam's point of view and from the Ramah's point of view. And then we considered the question also of how much should you factor in the concern of nights after this one, and then also the question of to what extent is there a possibility of using less oil for the other candles? Would that not perhaps solve some of these problems in a practical sense? And that gets us up to our next topic of what are the other implications of treating the mahadran as if it's the Ikar Mitzvah itself. Okay, do we have somebody who wants to dive for us? Jonathan, look what you do. Okay.